Queen mugged them, these men who worked for her, men she now considered friends. They smiled back. Damn it, they were all so wonderful. How could she stay annoyed? She knew they meant well, but they didn't understand Scott. He'd run off again if she didn't follow his directions to the letter. As if he'd read her mind, Justice said, "Aw, buck up, Buttercup. We won't chase off your brother. We can be subtle," Lise added. "You know that, right?" "And in case it isn't Scott," Miles explained, "we need to be there. You're not dumb, Sahara. If you looked at this objectively, you'd admit we're right." Brand leaned forward, his forearms on the table, hands clasped together, an expression serious. "It'll be okay, babe." The stiffness left her spine. Her life had been so much less complicated before these big, lovable lugs had entered it, but she knew deep down she wouldn't trade them for the world.
"Enoch," she said to her hovering best friend and ace assistant, "would you mind getting pastries to go with the coffee?"
He smiled in relief, recognizing the request as a return to the norm.
"I already did. I'll see if they've arrived yet."
He left the room with a new jaunt to his stride.
"We'll wait for him," Lise said. "After all, he's the one who got the message, right?"
"From the PI, yes," she said. "But I could just call him directly."
"No," Miles said. "That might tip off whoever contacted him, your brother or someone impersonating him. We didn't all sneak in here just to blow the element of surprise."
"Right."
She should have thought of that.
"How did you sneak in?"
Enoch had told her they'd come into body armor in a way that no one would know they had congregated. She had to admit she was curious.
"Catalina drove," Lise said. "Anyone could see her dropping me off near the parking garage entrance, but they wouldn't have seen Miles and Justice, who were ducked down in back and entered low when I opened the back door to grab a jacket."
Sahara nodded.
"Very sneaky. I like it."
"Sneaky?" Justice growled. "Is you trying to go off without us?"
She held up a hand.
"I've already rethought that, and of course you're right. I'm positive it is Scott, but on the tiny chance that it might not be, I agree I should have backup."
"Well, hallelujah," Lise said. She turned to Brand.
"I probably would have come to that conclusion on my own, so please don't gloat."
"Wouldn't think of it."
His phone buzzed, and he withdrew it to look at the screen, quieted it with a touch of a button, then put it back in his pocket. Suspicion bloomed.
"Who was that?"
Brand shook his head. "Not important." Before she could question him further, Enoch re-entered with a tray of donuts, Danish, and muffins. While he served coffee and the snacks, Sahara studied Brand. She half turned toward him, asking quietly,
"Was that Becky?"
He snorted. "After all you gave her, odds are she'd contact you before me."
Feeling culpable all over again, Sahara looked down at her hands.
"Then who?"
"So nosy," he said in a mildly teasing tone, surprising her. "Actually, it was Drew Black from the SBC."
Her gaze shot to his, apprehension getting a stranglehold on her. She knew that Drew Black was the president of the mixed martial arts organization Supreme Battle Challenge, or SBC, as it was widely known.
"What did he want?"
Brand shrugged as if it didn't matter.
"I assume the organization wants an answer about the next fight. I've been putting them off for a while now."
Her chest tightened. Sahara knew she could lose him to the sport he loved, but lately, what he wanted mattered more to her than what she wanted. Of course, Lise overheard.
"Have you made a decision?"
Both Miles and Justice tuned in, waiting for his reply. Brand looked only at Sahara.
"The fight they want me to take is in Japan. I'd have to start training now to be ready, and there wouldn't be much time for anything else. Those two things combined made the decision for me."
Sahara frowned, paying little attention to the buzz around her as Miles, Lise, and Justice weighed in, discussing the other fighter, the venue, even the payout in the contract. She wanted Brand to sign on as a bodyguard, but she didn't want him to skip anything important to him. He'd already been struggling with his self-imposed obligation to Becky, and she'd only added to that burden. She cut through the conversation to ask,
"You're worried about me, aren't you?"
His dark gaze fixed on her.
"Very."
Aware of the sudden fascinated silence, she chewed her lower lip.
"I wouldn't want you to."
"I know."
He covered both her hands with one of his own.
"I have a lot to consider, but there's time for me to decide. For now, let's figure out this thing with your brother."
The most alarming part, Brand thought, was that Scott, or someone pretending to be Scott, had chosen tonight to meet with Sahara.
That made them scramble to create their plans. Worse, it was dark as Hades down by the river where she said they were to meet. Not even the street lamps reached, and with only a sliver of a moon and a few scattered stars, they could easily lose sight of her. Brand crouched down on the floor in the back of one of the agency's SUVs, said, "Park so your headlamps light the way and leave them on." He'd already disconnected the interior lights, so when he opened the door and followed discreetly, no lights would give him away. With nervousness, or maybe excitement, lacing her tone, she replied,
"Okay, good idea. I know my way, but still, there could be snakes out there, or spiders, or..."
"You're afraid of spiders and snakes?"
"Not when I can see them, but I don't like the idea of stumbling into them in the dark."
"Yeah, I wouldn't like that either." Brand felt the surface of the road change as she drove off the asphalt and bumped over the rocky ground.
"I'll get as close as I can," she said softly. "But it's been a while since I was here, and that was always on foot. I don't think it's safe to take the car too much farther."
They'd driven an hour south along continually narrowing roads that followed the river. In the distance, Brand heard a barge horn echoing over the water.
"It's really foggy,"
Sahara whispered. "We can cancel at any time," he said fast, hoping to encourage her to do just that. "Say the word."
"No, foggy is probably good, in case anyone is looking for Scott."
"You have the mic in your pocket? We need to make sure the others can hear every word, too." The plan was for him to creep closer on foot, staying low in the dew-wet weeds and scrub brushes, while the others encircled the area, Lise on higher ground, Miles and Justice near the road, ready to close in if necessary. They'd gotten there earlier to find their hiding spots, to help avoid detection.
"I have it,"
Sahara promised him.
"We tested it and retested it."
Enoch remained at the offices, monitoring the tracer tacked to Sahara's sweater. They'd done all they could to ensure her safety, short of refusing to let her go, and he knew well that no man could do that. Sahara was a woman who understood the danger, weighed the risk to each encounter, and made her own decisions. She was a woman who loved her brother dearly, and would probably face off with the devil to get him back. Brand briefly closed his eyes. God, he hated that Scott had put her in this position. She stopped the car.
"I can see the river from here."
She inhaled, then slowly blew out the breath.
"Brand?"
"Yeah, babe?"
"I believe it's Scott, I really do. But at the same time, I'm so afraid that he might really be gone, and that I'm just fooling myself. And that would be so awful."
"Shh," Brand said, wishing he had the words to reassure her. He just didn't know. If it was her brother, he was a real dick for putting her through this. "You're the strongest person I know, Sahara. So strong you leave me awed. You can do this, and however it turns out, we'll deal with it."
"Together?"
"That's sure as hell my plan." Silence hung in the humid air. Then she whispered,
"Did you know I was falling in love with you?"
Jesus, she had a knack for startling timing. A new rush of protectiveness surged through him, making his voice rough. "I was hopeful." He heard the smile in her tone when she teased,
"That was easier to admit than I expected."
"I'm glad. Soon as we get through this, I'll make a few admissions of my own." She started to twist to see him. "Don't," Brand warned. "If anyone is watching the car, they'll wonder who you're talking to." Was she stalling to work up her nerve? He imagined visiting the area with her brother at her side was vastly different from a late-night rendezvous under potentially dangerous circumstances. "I'll be right behind you, okay?"
"Okay. Brand?"
She hesitated.
"You be careful, too. I couldn't bear if you got hurt helping me."
"After what you just told me, you can bet my plan is to have you all to myself tonight in bed, and after I've exhausted you, then we'll do some talking."
"That sounds nice."
He heard an odd noise on the roof of the SUV and almost groaned. "Is that rain?"
"It's just drizzling. I have an umbrella and I won't melt."
From his crouched position in back, he watched her stiffen her shoulders.
"It's time. Thank you for being here with me."
She opened the door and stepped out, opening her umbrella before closing the door again, giving him no chance to say anything more. Brand waited until she'd had time to go a few yards ahead, then he slipped from the SUV. Dressed all in black, he blended with the shadows. Midway across, he could see ribbons of light dancing over the surface of the river. Farther away, traffic hummed over a bridge. This area, though, was nothing but rough bushes, rocks, and crowded trees that shrouded the shore in darkness.
He could barely see Sahara as she gingerly sat on a fallen log. Her voice, soft and uncertain, carried to him when she whispered,
"Scott."
Ducking down behind a damp cluster of barren trees, Brand withdrew his gun and a strong flashlight. If necessary, he could use the light to distinguish Sahara from anyone else. They both heard the rustling of leaves as a body emerged from the right. Tall, dressed in a black slicker with a hat pulled low. Brand tensed. Sahara shot out of her seat, the umbrella held limply at her side.
Scott!
The intruder's arms opened and Sahara flew into them. Brand saw her feet leave the ground as the man hugged her hard, both of them oblivious to the rain. Suddenly Sahara was sobbing, and Brand felt everything inside him clench in pain. He'd never thought to hear her cry like that, but now she wept with the same enthusiasm that she did everything else. Her brother whispered, "Shh, shh, I'm sorry, sis, so damn sorry." Sahara slugged him, then shoved out of his arms.
"They told me you were dead."
"I know." He grabbed her in for another hug. "I had no choice, and I promise I can explain everything."
"You could have told me you were alive."
"No, I couldn't tell anyone. I knew certain people would be watching you, and I'm sorry, hun, but you're an open book."
He framed her face. "I didn't expect you to deny it, though, and to send a damn PI haunting my every step." Sahara drew a shuddering breath.
"You can come home now?"
"Not yet, but hopefully soon."
Taking the umbrella from her and holding it over them both, Scott led her back to the log. Brand had to keep reminding himself that this was her brother, a brother she adored, so he couldn't dismember the guy for making her cry. But he wanted to.
"I can't believe it's raining." Scott sat with his arm around her, his head tipped to rest on the top of hers. "You're warm enough?"
She nodded, sniffled, and dug out a tissue.
"Yes. Where have you been, Scott?"
"Everywhere. Always on the move, hiding."
He stretched out his legs and heaved a sigh.
"Ugh. That night on the yacht. I was supposed to die."
He touched his ribs. "The bastard stabbed me. But though it bled like crazy, it was only a superficial wound."
"Stabbed?"
With new tears making her voice thick, she asked,
"You're sure you're all right?"
He nodded.
"I dove overboard before they could do more damage. It was so dark you couldn't see past the yacht's lights. None of them knew anything about boating, so they kept watching the water where I'd gone in."
He hugged her.
"They didn't expect me to surface at the stern."
Sahara gasped.
"The life raft!"
"You know I kept it strapped on the transom for easy access. They were all excited, all talking at once, so they didn't hear me unfasten it. Even once I had it, I kept swimming away from the boat."
"You were bleeding?"
she asked with a tremor in her voice.
"Yeah, and I don't mind telling you every shark movie I'd ever seen kept playing in my head."
"Asshole," Brand wanted to shout. "Why give her the gruesome details now? She was already upset. Scott should be reassuring her, not adding to her nightmare memories."
"I was still pushing farther away when they started the motor and drove away from me. Then I inflated the raft and made my way to shore."
"You keep saying them and they. Who was it, Scott? Who did this to us?"
A gust of wind rode in off the river, causing the leaves over Brand's head to shudder, spilling more rain down on him. He swiped a hand over his face, determined to keep Sahara in his sights at all times. He watched as Scott struggled with the umbrella.
"Let's talk in your car," he said.
She agreed, but just as they stood, all hell broke loose. Two men exploded out of the bushes, guns in hand and shouting orders. Brand started to lunge forward, but something solid hit him in the back of the head. He dropped to his knees, lost his hold on the flashlight, but maintained consciousness by a thread. The bastards had a strobe light, and that, along with the shouting, added to the confusion. He could hear yelling, heard Sahara's distinctive voice cursing someone, and then he heard a gunshot. His heart went into his throat, until Sahara screamed,
"Scott!"
She sounded equal parts panicked and pissed, but not hurt. Knowing Lise, Miles, and Justice were already on their way, Brand shoved to his feet. Through the wildly flashing light, he saw the men racing toward a small motorboat moored on the shore. In another bright flash, he saw that one man had an arm locked around Sahara's throat, dragging her toward it.
"No!"
He ran full tilt, stumbling twice because of the knock on the head, falling once onto the wet, loamy ground. He didn't stay down even when he heard Lise call his name. The motor revved on the boat, and it shot out to the river. Too many bodies filled that small boat.
One of them, Saharis. He didn't dare shoot, not with her in the mix of the turmoil. A gunshot sounded from the boat, and a second later he heard a snarled, "Bitch!" along with the sounds of a scuffle. "Sahara!"
"Take care of Scott!"
she shouted, the words muffled by the wind and rain. "Scott's dead," someone said with a laugh.
"No!"
she screamed.
"Please!"
The rest of her words faded away on the dark night. Brand realized that he stood waist-deep in the frigid water. His heart felt numb, his lungs unable to get enough air. Something bumped against his leg, and he looked down to see Sahara's mangled umbrella washing against the shore. His throat tightened painfully.
"Brand," Lee said urgently. "Come on, we have to go. Enoch has a tracer on her, you know that. We'll find her."
Justice added, "But it's better if we don't wait." Brand slowly turned, mud sucking at his feet.
"Her brother?" he asked with ominous undertones. "Coming around," Miles said. "He caught a bullet in the arm, just a graze, I think. But apparently he hit his head when he went down. I guess that's why the goons thought he was dead. Why they left him and took her instead."
Fury carried Brand to where Scott Silver sat on the sodden ground, his back propped against the log, his head hanging forward. Sahara's phone, still lit up, lay on the ground beside him. Brand picked it up and put it in his pocket. His heart started to pound in thundering beats. With one hand, he hauled Scott to his tiptoes and rattled him.
"You ignorant fucker! Do you realize what you've done?"
"I was careful," Scott muttered, wincing with the pain in his head and arm.
"No one followed me, so they must have followed you."
Driven by blind rage, Brand cocked back a fist, and Justice captured it. Calm to the point of morbid, he said, "Stop and think, man. If you kill him, Sahara will never forgive you."
"You heard her," Miles said with his own measure of anger. "She's worried about the bastard. For her sake, we have to take care of him."
"I can take care of myself," Scott growled. It required 3 deep breaths before Brand was able to open his fingers and let Scott drop back flat on his feet. He retrieved his fist from Justice, who gave him an apologetic whack on the back.
"His head, damn it," Lee said. "Go easy, will you? You saw him get conked."
"But of a gun, it looked like," Miles said.
"Sorry we didn't get here quick enough."
"I'm fine," Brand lied, and immediately thought of how Sahara had said the same, how she'd stubbornly insisted it was so. Despite her denials, she was still hurt, and now unscrupulous bastards had her again.
"After I get her back," Brand told Scott, "I plan to finish this."
"Suit yourself." Scott clenched a hand around his bleeding arm. "But we have to move now." As if he thought he could take charge of the situation, he started for the car, saying,
"Tell me who has the tracer on her. How well do you know him? And how many cars did you bring? Jesus, it's no wonder you were..."
He squawked when Justice and Miles each grabbed one of his arms and practically threw him into the back of the SUV. Miles climbed in behind him. Brand followed. Justice got in the front passenger seat and Lee got behind the wheel.
"What the hell is this?" Scott demanded, looking a little wary when Brand turned on the flashlight.
"Take off your coat." He located the first aid kit and opened it. For Sahara, he'd keep her asshole brother alive. For now.
"I don't need..." Miles said.
"No one gives a shit what you need.
We're doing this for Sahara, so take off the fucking coat."
From the front, Lee said, "I'm calling Enoch now, so keep it down." Silently, Scott struggled out of his coat.
"I know Enoch. He has the tracer?"
No one replied, and no one moved to help him with his coat. But as he eased his arm from the sleeve, Brand saw the blood everywhere and quietly cursed. Enoch answered on the first ring.
"Everything okay?"
Lee said. "They got her, Enoch. We need to know which way to go."
"Oh, God."
Worry sharpened his voice.
"Oh, Jesus.
Stop praying and give us directions," Justice ordered.
I'm on it. Let me see."
The seconds ticked by. Needing to occupy himself, Brand got out cleaning swabs, gauze pads, and tape. His eyes burned, and his guts churned.
She had to be okay. He had to have a chance to tell her how much she meant to him. She was everything. Every fucking thing. If they touched her, if they hurt her, he'd...
"Okay," Enoch said, breathing hard. "They're on 71 heading towards 75. How long before you can be on the highway?"
"They cross the river in a boat, so they have the jump on us. Maybe 15 minutes or so, given traffic, once I reach the actual roadway."
Justice glanced over the seat.
"Hold on. It'll be bumpy for a bit."
"Don't worry about us," Miles said.
Lise drove fast over the rough terrain, anxious to get them on solid ground. Every second felt like an hour. "Take off the shirt," Miles said quietly. Solemn, Scott did as directed.
"How bad is your head?"
"Mild concussion, probably," Scott said.
"I wasn't talking to you."
Brand glanced up as he scooted closer to Sahara's brother. "I'll live. Let's just concentrate on getting to her."
"We will, you know," Miles vowed. "Get her, I mean."
Brand nodded at Miles. "Call the old guys. See if they've found out anything from Grant."
"Douglas Grant?" Scott asked.
Again, they ignored him.
"And see if they've found a way to contact Ross Moran."
"I know how to contact him," Scott offered quickly.
Everyone went still. Scott cleared his throat.
"I paid him, you know. Left the money in his apartment, then texted him and told him so. I figured that's why they were after Sahara, trying to get what I owed. I wouldn't have asked her to meet me if I didn't think that shit was already settled."
"How?"
Justice demanded.
"How did you find him?"
"I spent a hell of a lot of time tracking him down. That's how.
He's the key to exposing the bastards who tried to murder me." "Tried being the operative word," Miles murmured.
Scott nodded. "Ross had done a job for me, but then I was attacked on my yacht and never got a chance to pay him." Everyone went silent while Enoch gave more directions. When he finished, Lise ordered, "Start explaining and make it fast."
They now had something to go on.
Brand couldn't think about anything else or he'd lose the fragile grip on his control.
"I'll bandage while you talk."
Examining Scott's arm gave him something to focus on besides his worry. Miles held the flashlight. Neither of them reacted to the raw, ravaged wound in Scott's arm. Inch and a half wide, about 3 inches long, already blackened around the edges, it looked painful. Knowing it would burn like hell, Brand swabbed at the blood, cleaning enough off around the damaged area so that the wrapping would hold. Scott hissed in his breath, but held perfectly still.
"You need to go to the hospital. Not until I have my sister back. But no one is taking you there yet," Brand finished.
It required everything he had not to blame the brother. Still on an open line, Enoch asked,
"You found her brother?"
"Yeah, and a whole shit ton of trouble."
Enoch surprised everyone by gritting out,
"Son of a bitch! I don't believe this!"
Scott looked momentarily guilty, then rallied.
"I have Ross's number. The bastard moved around a few times, but I found his new apartment. I left the money there that I owed him, then texted him to let him know. He should have found it already."
"You paid him everything?"
Justice asked. "Twice what I owed him, actually. I thought that would be the end of it."
"You thought your ass was finally safe," Miles accused. "If that's all they wanted," Lise asked, "then who took Sahara today?"
"I recognized voices."
Scott's face showed the pain he felt, physically and emotionally.
"Not Ross's, but I definitely heard Olson Winger, maybe Terrence. There was so much chaos."
"And that damn flashing light,"
Justice muttered.
Scott nodded. "They work with Ross Moran." Levering carefully to one hip, he dug the phone from his pocket, thumbed the screen, and pulled up Ross's number. Miles took it from him. Scott started to object, but the dark stare from Miles convinced him to stay quiet.
"Let's not call him yet," Lise decided. "We need to get closer first. We don't want to push them into doing anything rash."
Brand squeezed his eyes shut. No, they didn't want the bastards doing anything rash, like kidnapping her a second time or shooting her brother. In comparison, rash could only mean one thing, but he couldn't contemplate that.
She had to be okay.
Trusting his friends to think clearly, to accurately gauge the situation, Brand busied himself by layering gauze pads on Scott's gunshot wound, then he wrapped and taped it down.
"I have aspirin. I'll take 3.
Brand handed them over. Inside, he felt like a bomb slowly ticking, the explosion getting closer and closer. Enoch interrupted with more directions.
"They're off the highway and driving through Darville."
"Never heard of it," Lise said.
"Just looked it up," Enoch said. "It's a dead little town. Most of the business is gone."
A perfect place to hide a victim. Enoch went through directions for the exit to take and then the roads to follow. Justice put everything in his phone to use GPS.
"Tell us if they stop,"
Lise said, speeding fast now that he was on wide highway. Luckily, the traffic was low, which allowed them to make up some time. In the distance, lightning shattered across the black sky. A few seconds later, thunder rumbled. The storm matched Brand's turbulent mood. Sitting back against the wall of the SUV, he narrowed his gaze on Sahara's brother.
"Now,"
he said, his voice evenly modulated to hide his rage. Finish explaining. Chapter 15 Sahara shivered in her wet clothes and bare feet. Why hadn't she dressed reasonably in jeans and boots instead of hoping to look her best when she reunited with her brother? It wasn't like he expected her to wear her classiest business outfit to a clandestine meeting at the riverbank. No, the choice of outfit was all her doing. She'd wanted Scott to have a good impression of her after all this time. Her only concession to the weather and location had been a longer skirt, snug-fitting sweater, and booties instead of stiletto heels. The booties should have stayed in place, damn it. But somewhere along the way she'd lost one of them, maybe while getting dragged into the small boat. She had a vague recollection of a long scratch along the back of one calf and a solid crack to her elbow. In the process of her second kidnapping, she'd also lost her umbrella and, unfortunately, her phone. Worse, they'd taken her gun from her. She blamed her stupid panic for that. If she hadn't seen Scott shot, hadn't seen him fall, she might have kept a cool head. Instead, blind rage had driven her, and she jerked out the gun without thinking through the fact that three men surrounded her at close range. The red-headed goon had backhanded her so hard she'd nearly toppled out of the rickety boat. The blow was strong enough that darkness had temporarily closed in. It had been an easy thing for him to wrest the gun from her slack fingers. Her face still stung. She was so damned cold that she appreciated the throbbing pain. At least it was something she could feel, besides worry and stark, gnawing despair. One guy looked back from the front seat. "Have you called Ross yet?" The redhead who'd struck her in the boat and then tied her hands too tightly in the car muttered, "He's meeting us there." Sahara cocked a supercilious brow.
"Does he know why he's meeting you?"
For an answer, Olsen's frown deepened. The driver leered at her in the rearview mirror, licked his lips and murmured huskily,
"Russ won't object. Not anymore."
"You'd be wise to leave her alone," Olsen said.
"Right before he left, he agreed it was a good plan to get her."
"With him, Andy, not without him."
Olsen slumped lower in his seat.
"Don't fool yourself. When he finds out, he's gonna be pissed."
Sahara memorized the names as they said them, and the faces now that she could see them. Eventually, they would pay. If she lived long enough. She eyed Olsen.
"So Ross is going to join us."
The more she heard, the more she thought Ross might be her best bet for surviving, mostly unscathed. Olsen spared her a glance.
"You'd do best to keep quiet."
A tall order. She couldn't be quiet on her best days, so how could he expect it of her now, when she was so miserable that she really wanted them to be miserable too? If it was just the physical discomfort, she could be all stoic and brave, no problem. But her heart ached, both for her brother and for the anguish she'd heard in Bran's voice as he'd shouted her name. The two men she loved more than life. Would she ever see either of them again? Her gaze encompassed all the men.
"I've heard of stupid, but this is off the charts. I almost feel sorry for you, knowing how it's going to end."
His tone taunting, the driver said,
"Ross didn't want you hurt because he considered you more valuable if you weren't. But the rules have changed, sugar, and you're now free game."
Did he have to sound so anticipatory?
"You're a dumbass, Andy," Olsen snapped. "In case any of you failed to notice, Ross is sweet on her. If she hadn't tried to blow my brains out, I wouldn't have struck her. Ross is going to be furious, and that doesn't bode well for any of us."
"I tried to kill you,"
Sahara said numbly.
"Because you shot my brother."
Terran snarled over the seat.
"You lied to us. You knew he was alive and that he owed us, but you..."
Olsen kicked the seat.
"Shut up."
They all seemed out of control, not at all like Ross, who had dictated with calm decisiveness. Sahara swallowed heavily, her fear very real. Ross had told her he wouldn't let her be hurt, but he wasn't here, and these men seemed more than capable of hurting her in many, many ways. She needed the upper hand, and she couldn't get it by cowering. Turning her head, she glared at Olsen. He sat in sullen silence beside her.
"Is it your plan to freeze me to death?"
"You'll be able to get warm and dry in a few more minutes."
Great. That meant the guys could catch up to her that much quicker. She worked up a believable tremor in her lips.
"My arms are aching. Those wet ropes are tightening, and I can't feel my fingers anymore."
His gaze narrowed on her.
"Once you're inside, I'll retie you to the bed."
Uh-oh. Trying for mere curiosity rather than dread, she asked,
"There's a bed?"
Andy again looked at her in the rearview mirror. "I hope you take off those wet clothes. We'll have you cozy in no time," she snapped.
"Will you watch the road before you kill us all?"
He grinned suggestively and went back to driving. Terence, the passenger in front, scowled.
"Who says you get to play with her? I'm the one who took the worst beating from that gorilla who came after her. She owes me."
Sahara felt her nerves fraying. She drew up her legs and kicked Andy's seat, hard.
"He's not a gorilla."
The car swerved dangerously, sliding on the wet road and damn near spinning. Olsen thrust out an arm to pin her in place until Andy got control of the car again. Everyone was silent in shock. Sahara, who'd half slid down the seat, struggled back up. Olsen gripped her face in a hard hand.
"Do anything like that again, and you won't like the consequences."
"What will you do?"
she sneered as best she could, given how he squeezed her cheeks.
"Kidnap me? Tie me up? Freeze me to death?"
Terence laughed.
"By God, she's got balls."
Olsen thrust her away.
"She won't be so ballsy when I stick her in the trunk,"
Sahara snorted. He turned to her.
"Naked. I'll stuff you in there naked, and I'll let Andy be the one to strip you."
Okay, maybe that quelled a little of her rebelliousness, but not all.
"Ross is going to be furious. Did you know he visited me?"
She lifted her chin.
"We had a nice, friendly chat. He asked me out to dinner."
Another silent shock ballooned, then burst with a million outraged questions from all directions. She sat in smug silence until they wound down, then said with derision,
"Oh, so you didn't know. Hmm, interesting."
Olsen, being the closest, opted for the most intimidation by pointing the gun directly at her.
"Where did he visit you?"
"A party at Douglas Grant's house,"
she took pleasure in saying.
"Do you know the DA? He's a pig, so I assume you're good friends."
Olsen looked blank. Terence jerked around over the seat to glare at her.
"Why the fuck would he be visiting the DA?"
Sahara smiled.
"Why, to see me, of course. He likes me."
Her gaze coasted over all of them.
"He's going to be so enraged when he sees how you've treated me."
"Fuck him,"
Andy said with venom, slamming his hands against the steering wheel.
"We need to get paid. We're here,"
Olsen said calmly.
"Pull around back."
Sahara bent to see out the windshield, but until the headlights hit a stained glass window, she didn't realize they were at a church.
At least there shouldn't be a bed, meaning that had only been an idle threat.
"You've got to be kidding me."
"It's abandoned,"
Olsen said, already clenching one freckled hand around her arm.
"Don't get any ideas about salvation."
She managed a credible laugh.
"I bet you all incinerate the second you set foot on holy ground."
Olsen started to open the door, but it suddenly jerked out of his hand, spilling him halfway out. Since he had a grip on Sahara, she got jerked across the seat. The pressure on her tightly tied arms made her groan. Ross Moran stood there, big, blue-eyed, heaving with fury. He seemed impervious to the rain drenching him, plastering his hair to his head, gluing his shirt to his broad shoulders. His fisted hands hung tense at his sides, and his scorching gaze went over her as she struggled upright. Their eyes met, then his attention shot to Olsen.
"Start explaining."
Sensing a change in her situation, Sahara asked,
"Could I please get inside first? I'm soaked, freezing, and I'd dearly love to have the feeling restored in my arms."
After all, she couldn't run off into the night during a storm with her arms so tightly tied. She knew she wouldn't make it far. If they'd remove the ropes and she could get her bearings, well then... The blaze of anger on Ross's face settled into an inferno of quiet rage. He withdrew a large knife from a sheath on his belt and said,
"Turn around."
Terence protested, saying, "Ross!" The knife pointed in Terence's direction.
"Shut the fuck up! I'll deal with you next."
Alarmed, he squeaked,
"Me?"
Ross looked at Olsen and Andy.
"All of you."
Trying to look brave, Andy stepped out into the rain, too, and promptly pulled up the collar to his jacket, already shivering.
"We need our money, damn it!"
"I got your fucking money, moron!"
Gently, Ross pressed her forward to better expose her hands.
"Don't move."
He sliced cleanly through the ropes.
"What do you mean you have the money?"
Olsen asked.
"Her brother paid it."
More questions exploded.
"Gentlemen, please."
Sahara bit back tears as feeling rushed into her aching arms, up to her shoulders and into her neck.
Let's get out of this miserable rain.
Ross said. The three of you go on in. Olsen heaved a sigh.
Sorry, no can do, boss. She's got you bewitched. But what's done is done. We can't just turn her loose now.
No, Ross agreed. We can't.
He scooped Sahara up into his arms, ignoring the groan she couldn't stifle. Her entire body ached, and now more rain drenched her.
Please tell me this relic is heated.
No,
Olsen said, walking alongside them.
But we installed a heater. If you don't dismantle it, you should be warm enough soon.
Soon she'd be free, but she kept that to herself. She couldn't quite tell if Ross was with his comrades or against them. His trite, "No, we can't," bothered her a lot.
Then again, he wasn't a stupid man, so he had to realize that taking a stand at this particular moment could get them both killed.
I'm capable of walking.
Barefoot? He carried her easily, leaning over her to help shield her from the rain. I can barely see where I'm going, but I've already discovered roots grown through concrete, broken glass, and rocks.
Sahara peered down and saw that he was right. The puddles forming everywhere couldn't hide the treacherous path. Not that she'd thank him. He was the one who'd started this absurd campaign against her. They went up rickety wooden steps that creaked under Ross's weight. Then he dipped down to fit under a nailed board across a collapsing doorframe and stepped into a dark vestibule. Dead vines had overtaken the crumbling plaster walls. Spiderwebs hung thick from the high ceiling. When Ross stepped into the desolate little church, she found that very little outside light penetrated. Boards covered most of the windows, and grime coated those still unbroken. In one corner of the rectangular room, next to a toppled pulpit, a kerosene heater gave off welcoming warmth.
"Someone get a light. This place is crumbling."
"Got it."
Terence dug out a flashlight and turned it on. It flashed over every inch of the room in a disorienting light show.
"Sorry, it's still on strobe. There."
He adjusted it to a single beam that, when set atop a shelf, didn't quite reach all corners of the room. Ross carried her past several pews, most of them rotting, broken, or overturned. Someone had stacked blankets on a still-intact pew near the heater. Sahara saw the coil of rope and wanted to scream. Her wrists were raw, her arms and shoulders still protesting every movement. Ross set her on her feet, murmuring,
"Careful,"
when she wavered. She straightened her spine and squared her shoulders, determined to hide her weakness.
"I'm fine."
She couldn't do anything about her shivers. He tipped up her chin.
"Before you come up with some harebrained idea of making a run for it, you should know that many of the floorboards are rotted. There are exposed nails everywhere and several holes with jagged edges. Fall through and you drop all the way to a very dank, spooky basement. If you're not shredded on the way down, you're bound to break a leg when you land."
Lovely. Either put up with their mistreatment or risk mangling herself. Then again, perhaps she had a third option. She looked Ross right in the eye and said,
"I won't be tied again. It's horribly uncomfortable, and as you just pointed out, it's not like I can run away."
Andy crowded close, sneering,
"You're not calling the shots, lady, so stop belly aching and..."
Carelessly, without even looking at Andy, Ross straightened an arm and landed a fist to his face. Andy reeled back, landed against a kneeler, tripped, and slammed awkwardly into a wall. Dust and cobwebs fell from the impact. Ross stared at him, his expression demonic in the low, indirect light.
"You're on thin ice already. Shooting off your mouth won't help."
Tension swelled within the church, so thick Sahara wondered that no one choked on it. Olsen and Terence shared a look. Andy wisely clamped his lips together. To Sahara, Ross said,
"Andy's right. You're not calling the shots, but I see no reason to tie you. I also see no reason to keep you wet and shivering."
He turned to Olsen.
"You and Terence stand by the front door. Andy, you stand by the hall exit."
With only a few grumbles, the men moved to do as ordered.
"Strip out of your wet things," Ross ordered, "and wrap up in a blanket."
Her stomach bottomed out at the suggestion.
"No, thank you."
Where were her men? Now would be a good time for them to catch up. "You'll do it," Ross said. "Or I'll do it for you."
Out of the corner of her eyes, she saw Andy grin, placated by Ross's implied brutality. Suddenly, Ross leaned close and grabbed the lapels of her coat, hauling her up to her tiptoes. Putting his face close to hers, he growled,
"Do you understand?" Then, more softly, he breathed, "Trust me, or neither of us will make it out of here." Her eyes widened. So this was part of an act, a way to dupe his men so he could help her. He'd moved his goons a fair distance away to ensure a modicum of privacy. Taking advantage of that, Sahara murmured,
"Allow me to play my part."
She swung her hand up and around, determined to slap him hard. Unfortunately, Ross caught her wrist, his expression incredulous. "You little hellcat," he breathed, almost with admiration. Incensed that she hadn't gotten in one good crack, Sahara tried to jerk free. Ross easily subdued her, flipping her around so her back was to his chest, then locking her close with his bulky arms. She tried stomping his toes, but he wore boots and she was barefoot. Headbutting him was out since she only reached his chest. Andy hooted. Terrence snickered. Quietly, Olsen said,
"You already know you can't trust her, so stop dicking around."
Over her head, Ross asked,
"Is he right, Sahara? Should I go ahead and strip you now? Or do you think you can behave?"
"That depends."
Steamy heat rose from his body, alleviating some of her chill.
"Will I get to undress in private?"
"In this room," he told her, "with everyone's gaze averted. That's as private as it's going to get."
"Then I'd just as soon keep my wet clothes."
He sighed, difficult to the bitter end. In the next instant, he stripped off her coat, despite her squawking struggles. Then his big paw settled on her shoulder, gently groping. His gaze landed on her breasts.
"I suppose your sweater is dry enough. The skirt has to go, though."
He reached for the side zipper. Sahara slapped his hand, saying,
"I'll do it."
For a heartbeat or two, they stared at each other, her defiant, him amused.
"Spoil sport."
He shook out a blanket, then held it up in front of her, stretched wide between the breadth of his long arms.
"Good enough?"
Fuming, she gritted out,
"Look away."
He laughed softly and turned his head. Unwilling to push her luck any further, Sahara unzipped and shimmied out of the sodden skirt. After being dragged through the river to the boat, everything from her waist down was drenched, including her panties, but no way would she remove them. She dropped the skirt over the back of the pew, then took the blanket from Ross and wrapped it around herself toga-style, pulling one end to drape over her shoulder. Sitting in the corner of the pew closest to the kerosene heater, she tucked her feet up under the blanket. That little skirmish had helped her to forget, for just a few minutes, the sight of her brother falling into the mud after the gunshot. She squeezed her eyes shut and put her head in her hands.
"Sahara!"
She jerked her head up to glare at Ross. He gave her a stern look that gradually turned into rage. She didn't know what to think when he clasped her chin and lifted her face, turning it toward the dim light, his gaze searching.
"How did you bruise your face?"
"I got in the way of your friend's fist."
He straightened with a slow menace that had Olsen saying,
"She tried to shoot me. It was the easiest way to disarm her."
Sahara snapped.
"You just shot my brother. Of course I wanted to shoot you. In fact, I still do."
Olsen huffed.
"You see? She's nuts."
Fury got her off the bench. Her bare feet on the dirty floor sent a chill climbing straight through to her heart.
"Don't think I've forgotten you, Olsen. You're the sexist pig who feels superior to women."
Olsen reared back.
"What the hell are you talking about?"
"When you helped kidnap me the first time, I remember everything you said. I knew right then you were an insecure, ignorant..."
"That's enough!"
Ross forcibly pressed her back in her seat with a withering look that clearly said, "Cease and desist."
"He started it."
"For the love of... stay put!"
Assuming she'd obey, he turned away and said to the men,
"Anyone else touch her for any reason and he'll be dealing with me. Are we clear?"
After a collective bobbing of heads in the affirmative, Ross wanted explanations of what had gone down. Sahara could hear them explaining the chaos of the evening, how they'd intended to take Scott. Ross clearly wasn't happy, especially since, according to what he said, her brother really had paid the money owed. Somehow, he'd gotten into Ross's apartment and left it there for him to find.
"Why didn't you tell us you got the money?"
Andy asked.
"I wasn't sure if it was a trap. I didn't want to drag you all into it until I was sure no one had followed me."
Olsen nodded.
"I remember you told us to watch our backs. I'd just gotten a text telling me the money was at my place. Even after I got home and found it, I kept wondering if Scott had men ready to close in on me. Or on all of you. If I gave you away."
"You wouldn't." Terran said with conviction. Of course not. But a lot of good it did me trying to look out for you. Seems we might all be sunk anyway. He rubbed the back of his neck. We found one guy hiding in the bushes watching. I clubbed him in the back of the head. Brand. For an instant, pure terror gripped her. Then she remembered Brand calling her name, racing toward the boat. Her pulse calmed as she realized he was okay. Injured, probably, but like her, he would recover. Andy said, It should have been easy. But instead of raising his hand, Scott lunged toward me. I wasn't expecting that. I just reacted.
He's dead?
With a shrug in his voice, Andy said, Turned out she had a small army with her. We heard them charging in, so I didn't stick around to take his pulse. He sure dropped like a dead man.
In an effort to keep her heart from shattering, Sahara concentrated on listening. Once her men rescued her, she wanted to be able to give a detailed accounting to the police. Assuming any of the goons survived, the very least they deserved was a long time in prison.
How'd you know he'd be there?
Sahara was curious about that, too. She'd hoped they'd keep talking, the longer the better, so her backup could arrive.
Olsen said, I was staking out the agency, seeing if we'd have a chance to grab her since they missed her on the road.
Ross straightened. What do you mean?
Terrence and Andy, they tried to take her during a trip south. She had that same bodyguard with her, and he decided to shoot it out with them instead.
Ross glanced toward Sahara. I didn't know anything about that.
She stared back without reacting. Far as she was concerned, he'd started the scheme to get her, and that made him guiltiest of all. As if unaware of the undercurrent, Olsen continued.
I didn't see her coming or going again. I guess they were being extra cautious after that, but I noticed a dude hanging around.
And it turned out to be Scott?
Ross guessed.
Olsen nodded.
He tried to conceal himself, wore a hat and sunglasses and loose jacket, but that's what drew my attention to him, you know? And then there was no mistaking him once I did look closer.
Sahara remembered Brand making note of a man outside the agency. She supposed Scott had been trying to look out for her, or maybe he just wanted to make sure she was getting along okay after his death. If only he had trusted her.
When I followed him to the river, I figured he was meeting someone. I just didn't expect it to be her.
Ross stared heavenward. She seriously doubted any divine spirits were still hanging around.
He'd been a sneaky bastard, hard as hell to find, so once I spotted him, I wasn't about to let him get away again. He was extra cautious, but I remembered everything you taught us about tailing him, staying back and not doing anything to give myself away.
And it obviously worked, Ross said.
Olsen nodded.
Scott got to the river and spent an hour scoping out the place. I was up on a rise, far enough away that he couldn't see me while Terrence and Andy got the boat. The plan was to grab him and force him to pay up.
It was a good plan, Andy said, moving closer to her, propping a hip against one of the broken pews. Until she showed up.
She came alone, Terrence said, or so we thought.
She's not stupid,
Ross stated flatly. Then his eyes flared and he turned to stare at her. Quietly, he said,
You're not stupid.
She released an evil smile.
No, I'm not. Far from it, actually. Scott, please don't be dead.
She wondered at the time. Brand and the others should be arriving any minute now. She needed to warn them about the rotting floorboard so that no one fell through to the basement. Not for a second did she doubt that they'd be coming for her. Thank God the tracking device wasn't in her phone or umbrella, since she'd lost those.
Son of a bitch!
Ross half-laughed, then stood and glanced toward the door in expectation.
What is it?
Andy asked. Alarmed, he grabbed Sahara's arm and jerked her toward him so roughly she stumbled off her feet and almost lost her blanket.
Did you hear something?
Ross blew out a slow breath.
No.
He glanced at the way Andy held her and how she scrambled to keep the blanket around her.
There's nothing there. Let her go, Andy.
Bullshit!
Gaze frantic, Andy jerked her to stand in front of him.
You're in on it, aren't you, Ross?
Terrence frowned.
You're losing it, Andy. Don't say shit you'll regret.
Olsen now stared at the front door, too. Wrapping an arm tight around her waist and poking a gun into her ribs, Andy snarled,
This is a fucking setup!
Ross seemed to swell in front of her.
You little prick!
He started forward with a determined stride.
You dare accuse me? I'll shoot her!
Ross froze. From somewhere behind Sahara, Brand said,
Finger off the trigger, or I'll gladly kill you.
She jumped, turned her head, and saw that Brand and Lise both stood there, grim-faced, their guns drawn and aimed. Andy jerked around to face this new threat. He swung his gun wildly back and forth between the two men. Taking advantage of his panic, Ross threw a meaty fist. Sahara ducked, and the punch hit Andy right in the nose. She heard the crunch. Brand hauled her up and tucked her behind him. Ross continued to pound onto Andy, who put up a mild show of defense. Amid the commotion, Terrence bolted out the front door, but he didn't get far. They all heard the scuffle in the vestibule. Then Terrence got tossed back inside, his lifeless body breaking another hole in the floorboards so one arm and shoulder fell through. Justice stepped in, a taunting smile in place.
"Wait!"
Sahara shouted, poking her head up from where Brand tried to shield her.
"The floors are rotted. You have to be careful."
Justice backed up, and his foot went through the floor. He caught himself from falling completely. His arms splayed wide as he grabbed for the wall with one hand and a table with the other.
Damn! All hell broke loose. Again.
Olsen withdrew a gun, but Ross launched away from Andy and tackled him. Lise muttered,
"He's doing all our work for us."
After tucking Sahara down again, Brand said,
"Your brother is okay."
It felt like the weight of the world lifted off her. Leave it to Brand to know exactly what to say.
"Thank you."
Miles stepped through the door.
"I suppose since no one else has tried to run, all the action is in here?"
Lise looked to Sahara. "This is all of them?"
"Yes."
Now that each of her men had joined her, she asked,
"Where's my brother?"
"Out front,"
Miles said dismissively.
"He was keeping watch with me."
Which she took to mean that they didn't trust him, and Miles had ensured he didn't disappear again.
"But now he's calling the police." "Was he too injured to join them?"
"He really is okay."
Brand closely watched the fight between Ross and Olsen.
"The bullet only grazed his arm. He hit his head when he fell, but he's fine."
With that said, he stepped around the pew.
"Stay down."
She nodded.
"Okay."
Looking over the edge of the pew, she watched Brand approach the brawl. He appeared far too serious and somewhat wounded. There was a pinched look to his eyes and a tightness around his mouth. She glanced at Lise. He took his eyes off the melee long enough to wink at her. They both turned back to see the action. Wrestling Olsen flat to his back, Ross shouted,
"Stop fighting, damn it!"
He pressed a forearm across Olsen's throat.
"It's over! Let it go!"
Olsen obligingly went limp, allowing Ross to wrest the gun from his hand.
"Andy was right,"
he said, with bitter resentment around his great gulps of air.
"You fucked us, didn't you?"
"Actually, he's in it as deep as you are."
Brand snatched the gun out of Ross's hand and tossed it to Miles, who'd been about to help Justice get his foot out of the floor.
"Maybe deeper."
Ross groaned. As he turned, he said,
"I don't suppose you'd..."
Brand hit him hard enough to send him sprawling over Olsen again. Both men grunted. Legs braced apart, shoulders bunched and fists clenched, Brand said,
"Get up."
Ross looked past him to Sahara. She laughed.
"Don't look at me, you cretin. You brought this on yourself."
"I tried to help you."
"After you made me take off my skirt."
Groaning, he shifted his wary gaze to Brand.
"It wasn't like that, man. I wanted them to believe I was still on board with their idiot plan so I could..."
Brand hauled him up, which, given Ross's size, was no easy feat, and threw another punch. Ross blocked it and took a swing of his own. Big miscalculation, Sahara thought, when Brand took the blow, grinned, and then landed several of his own against Ross, first hitting his face, then his gut, then his face again, ending with a kick to the sternum that sent him sprawling once more, this time to the hard, dirty floor. With a sigh, she stood upright.
"Ah, that's enough."
"I'm just getting started," Brand said.
"I'm sorry, but I can't let you do that."
Holding tight to the blanket, she stepped around the pew and headed for Brand.
"Not only will you destroy the rickety floor, but what Ross said is true. He protected me tonight."
"Tonight? But that doesn't explain..."
"He didn't know anything about them ramming us on the road or this cockeyed kidnapping plan tonight,"
she explained.
"If Olsen hadn't called him, he wouldn't even be here."
Sluggishly, Ross sat up.
"A little late, honey."
Going tense all over again, Brand took a step forward. Sahara grabbed his arm.
"Brand, no."
Then to Ross, she blasted,
"Imbecile!" Don't you know when to keep quiet?
He touched his swollen mouth. I'll start now. Scott came through the door, one arm bandaged, a hand on the back of his head.
Too late. The cops are here, and they're going to be real interested in everything you have to say.
Ross looked at him. You and I have some private talking to do? Scott gave a mean smile.
I'm counting on it, you bastard.
Me? Ross pointed at Brand. He's the one who was cozying up with Chelsea Tuttle.
Brand locked his jaw. I wasn't. But what does that twit have to do with anything?
Bemused, Scott said,
she's the one who hired out my murder.
Chapter 16. Sahara couldn't remember ever being so tired. After a lot of talking to the police and then a visit to the hospital, the night had dragged on into dawn before they finally headed home. At the emergency room, a physician checked her, Scott, and Brand, but no one was seriously hurt. Scott's arm was cleaned and more properly bandaged. Luckily, neither Brand nor Scott had a concussion, but given their scowls, they both had killer headaches. She got a tetanus shot after Brand noticed the deep scratch on the back of her calf from the rusty edge of the boat. One of the doctors found her a pair of scrub pants to wear. They were far more comfortable than the blanket. Against her objections, Scott planned to spend the night at the house. She'd have rather kept him at the suite with her, where she could ensure he wouldn't disappear again, but then he and Brand weren't exactly seeing eye to eye, so perhaps a little time was in order. In any case, she didn't have the energy to argue about it. They would all meet up at the office at noon, hopefully better rested. For a while there, adrenaline had carried her through, but as soon as they arrived at the agency, she crashed. She could barely get one foot in front of the other. The night guards watched warily as Brand, with an arm around her, helped her to the elevator. To everyone they passed, Brand said, "She's fine, but it was a hell of a night. Sahara can explain tomorrow." She'd made many friends at the agency, she realized. These people cared about her. That was nice. Of course, she wouldn't be their boss any longer. She'd always known that when Scott returned, everything would change again. Exhaustion kept her smile dim, but it was there. Her brother was home. Maybe she'd find a way to stay involved in the agency, but if it didn't work out, she was okay with that. She had everything she needed. Inside the elevator, she turned her face up to see Brand. His expression remained stark. She touched his jaw.
Are you sure you're all right?
If anything, his mood further darkened.
Yeah? He bent and pressed a firm kiss to her forehead. Do you want a quick shower or just to hit the bed?
Hit the bed,
she said with an inelegant yawn.
I'm not sure I could stay awake for a shower.
Indulgent, he promised. We'll shower together in the morning. He got her inside the suite, then removed her coat and his own before scooping her up and carrying her to the bedroom. Her hair had dried in matted clumps. The rain had smeared her makeup, but they were both alive, and that's what mattered. Thinking about all the close calls lately made her start to shake. Brand methodically stripped her, pulled back the covers, and helped her into the bed. She wanted to protest the gentle treatment, but she honestly didn't have it in her. She remembered the discussion of strength she'd had with the women. Smiling sleepily, she said,
I see what they mean now.
Who?
Catalina, Maxie, and Fallon.
She snuggled into the pillow and closed her eyes.
Fallon insisted that Justice was stronger than her.
Brand asked,
that was in doubt?
She heard one shoe drop, then the other.
We were mostly talking about emotional strength and independence, but Maxie said it's nice to lean on Miles.
She opened her eyes and found Brand stepping out of his jeans and underwear. He tossed them into the pile with the rest of their discarded clothes.
Thank you for letting me lean on you.
He got into bed and curved around her, his chest to her back, his arms drawing her snug against him.
Thank you for trusting me.
She loved him, so of course she trusted him.
Brand?
Sleep, Sahara. He kissed her shoulder. We'll have plenty of time to work out all the kinks. She nodded.
Okay.
She was almost out when he whispered, Don't ever scare me like that again. She smiled and faded into sleep.
Brand was so testy, he almost didn't recognize himself. The bruise on Sahara's cheek had darkened. Combined with the cut on her temple and the scratch on her calf, she looked battered,
yet she'd smiled at him as if nothing had happened. After coffee, where she chatted in her normal way, they'd showered together.